This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back. I am Carl Mack, and this is, of course, Combat Chronicles. Now, if you want to hear all my thoughts on UFC 298, please head on over to www.patreon.com/combatchronicles. But for this episode, you get to hear about the big one, Ilia Topuria dethroning the great Alexander Volkanovski to win the UFC 145-pound featherweight title. I don't know about you guys, but it felt like a real big fight to me. It played out as such. Incredible stoppage that will surely be, at the end of the year, one of the great finishes that we see in all of combat sports. Topuria looks like a pound-for-pound talent. Volkanovski will always be a legend of the sport, regardless what happens from here on out. But without further ado, here's the section of the podcast that details that fight. And I'd love to hear your thoughts over on Twitter, at CombatCR. Let me know, do you agree with me, based on my reading of the fight, based on my reading of the fighters, based on how this fight pertains to the future of mixed martial arts. See you on the other side.
I respect you as a person, as a professional. I'm just fighting for my dreams.
All right, you guys.
You said please?
Okay. Yeah, snapped it off beautifully there.
He was going to stumble and crumble him.
And oh my goodness, that power. Wow.
That power sounds about right. Ilia Topuria knocking out Alexander Volkanovski in round two to become the new UFC 145-pound featherweight champion. And with that main event, which is so important to our viewing of the past, present and future, I guess, as it stands to the current MMA landscape, especially of the 145-pound division, and maybe as and then having wider ramifications in the pound-for-pound sense as well. I did think Topuria was going to get it done. If you heard my very brief summary of my thoughts on, was the last episode? Yeah, it must have been the last Patreon episode, right? I just thought, right blend of skills, right time, big dig, etc. Volk, not just the age thing, but you know, coming off the knockout loss to Izzy Makachev in the last fight, just seemed destined for Topuria to win. And actually, given the build-up for this, for the fight, I think Volkanovski did a great job, you know, with his old man routine and everything. I thought that commercial was great, and he played up to the shtick this week. But he was they both sort of set themselves up for failure, really, because if he did lose, then go, well, okay, you were past it. We'll talk about the fight in a second. I don't think he necessarily is that past it. But Topuria was setting himself up a little bit as well. Very brash, stealing the belt. You know, I'm not going to fight any of the contenders. I'm going to fight McGregor after I win the belt. All that sort of stuff. Doesn't really need any of that. I actually led with that clip from the face-offs after Wayne's when he said, you know, I really respect you and this is just my dream. I much prefer that side of Topuria. This sort of overly cocky, brash, flashy thing. He's easy to root for as a fighter. Don't need any of that. He's one of those fighters where his performance is very much the star-making aspect of his persona and the reception he's getting from fans, because he's an absolute destroyer, basically. But it seems that the UFC have put their chips in on him. Certainly having, you know, major Spanish sports stars backing him helps as well. But it's kind of like... I'm trying to make a comparison. guess you sort of say the Dallas Cowboys, where any team in the vicinity of the area supports them because they don't have a team. So, for example, Oklahoma. Or maybe something like the Carolina Panthers, where it's North and South Carolina that can support them. Because basically, due to his heritage, I think he's born in Germany. He is Georgian and is obviously represented in Spain. It's just a pretty large fan base there of people that will root for him on a sort of nationalistic basis. Adding, of course, that he looks the part, and physically and in terms of his output in the cage. And pretty easy to see that Ilya Topuria is the coming man. I just sort of, that sort of just played into my analysis as well. Just sort of in a kind of too big to fail kind of thing. I think going to, of course, people will say, oh, he's only beaten two fighters we've, you know, really heard of, in the featherweight division at least, in terms of Bryce Mitchell and Josh Emmett, and being ranked contenders. But I kind of saw that as very good sort of moving of a prospect, you know, out grapples a grappler, out strikes a striker, and now, you know, taking on one of the best cage generals of all time, one of the all-time greats. It's all about whether you can put all those pieces together, isn't it? And, you know, we saw against Bryce Mitchell that he just cut through him. We saw against Emmett that he was able to stand in the pocket of a big banger, piece him up with the jab, etc. But okay, what if he's got to think even more? What if he's given a variety of different looks? How's he going to respond then? Is he going to be just winging big punches and with no idea of craft? Well, it turns out actually that was not the case, and Topuria does look very much like, I mean, what was he, 27? I mean, this guy could end up one of the greats. I don't think it's like a Cody Garbrandt beating Dominic Cruz kind of situation where it was a stylistic thing, or, you know, Cody actually being quite one note or having a major, major issue that we didn't know about, which was obviously his chin. I know people say, it's not his chin, it's his defence. He's knocked out fucking like it's going out of fashion. Trust me, he don't have the best chin either. But with Topuria, and I think I made this case before, like, when they gave Julian Jackson the hardest punch of all time, they couldn't give him a great chin as well. And Topuria looks to be multifaceted, multi-skilled, you know, well-rounded, in the prime of his life, and insanely durable, and an absolute knockout artist. A couple of interesting things pre-fight is that Topuria didn't look quite as big as usual, and also Volkan obviously didn't look as small as I thought he would. They looked very much, you know, of the same weight class. They both fought at 155 before, and they both looked perfectly great for 145 pounds. So you can't even say that Volk was just run over by pure size or anything like that. Volk's a little tank there, and they both looked perfectly well matched. As I said, I don't think Topuria, to me, looked a little bit leaner, but did not affect his performance at all. Obviously, still looked a physical specimen. For me, the first round was an interesting one because they both seemed to be trying to throw things at the wall to see what sticked. Both trying to establish the leg kicks, very much low kicks, calf kicks and what have you. Volk going inside, outside, that sort of thing. Couldn't really get the jab going. Topuria trying to fathom out, can I hit him with the right hand now? You know, just trying to see how many steps to close the distance. What's his reaction time like? And actually, Volkanovski looked very good to me in terms of slipping, dipping and pivoting. He looked sharp. Did not look like a shot fighter at all. Sometimes, and I made this claim before, that you can tell a fighter's shot when they can get in and they're not as quick at getting out. Volkanovski looked very, very quick at getting out. It took Topuria's smarts and the ability to set up his shots to actually get it done. But certainly the first round, Rogan honed in on the Volkanovski's legs hurt. He's not moving the same. It looked fine to me, even though Topuria did get the calf kick going. Volkanovski was hitting him with low kicks as well. A little bit ropey. Overextended at times, Topuria wasn't quite there. Just wasn't really gauging the distance. That was my issue with Volkanovski. But they're both trying to sort of figure the other one out. Obviously, everyone online said, oh, it's a real chess match. Was it a chess match? Not quite at that point. I think it's more, you know, first round in Muay Thai kind of thing. Just sending out some feelers, figure out what's going to happen and see what reactions you can get. I said at the end of the third round, the first round, they could have gone either way, and actually the fight could go either way, in the sense that it didn't really give me a solid look at what the shape of the fight was going to be. I was still trying to figure it out at that point. Volkanovski was doing his thing. Could he sustain that over five? Was Topuria getting closer? Or was this going to be the pattern? Was he going to find it hard to get to Volk? as it stands, I actually prefer Volkanovski's approach in the second round. Was starting to sort of mess up Topuria's rhythm by anticipating him coming in and hitting with the jab first. Sort of more of a straight left rather than a jab. Real stubby shot, running him into it. And I thought at that point that Volkanovski started getting this kicking game going a bit more, going low, high. Just giving Topuria more to think about. Started redding up the nose. Sort of jab, pivot out, etc. Keep him moving, all these little things. And I thought, ooh, Volkanovski's starting to think his way into the fight here. He's starting to feel his way into the fight here. Started to get a bit of a rhythm going. And Topuria wasn't getting his rhythm going. I'm sure the jab was still there for Topuria and he was still getting the low kicks going. But when he'd rush into Volkanovski to try and hit him with bigger shots, Volkanovski was, you know, slipping, shoulder rolling, etc. And then dipping back out. And I thought, well, you know, he's getting close. But he's not getting any closer than he was in the first round. Sort of started to see a narrative forming. And then Topuria rather wisely started level changing himself, giving Volk more to think about. And because of Volk getting more comfortable, I feel, he was sending out more feelers himself. And as he started being more insistent about jabbing, and he wasn't really holding the pocket or anything like that, but just by jabbing and trying to slip back out the back door, he was giving Topuria that opportunity to, I hate that whole, you know, downloading data. It wasn't really the case. He was just sort of rolling with it, Topuria, and okay, cross counter, etc. Getting there, but not quite close enough. Okay, fine. Rather than one shot at a time, let's throw three or four. And of course, goes low, goes high, Volkanovski goes back, concedes ground, back to the cage, and very, very quickly, Topuria frames off, lead hand, bang, whips the right hand round, flattens him. I'm pretty sure he clobbered him with a left hook as well on the way down. Some more ground and pound. My brain's still jambled. I watched it maybe six or seven times, but maybe the brain doesn't want to compute such ultra violence. But slumped Volkanovski, much as Makhachev did, catching him with a single shot and then finishing him off with ground and pound. Both very, very violent finishes. Volkanovski getting up from both of them much too quickly, in my opinion. This one seemed to wear on him for a bit longer. He was down for a while, but it just bounces back so quickly. Volkanovski seems a guy who, despite sending out signals to us that not is all fine and it's not all fine and dandy when he's not in the cage, and maybe losses do wear on him harder than they appear to, he just bounces back, seems to bounce back straight away. Comes straight back round like a boomerang, to use an Australian analogy.
Alexander, you're obviously still loved. This is a hard moment for you. Give me your thoughts on it.
That's obviously as the powers in the hands. We knew you got to be careful of that. Well done to him. You know, he called me. I was going to start working everything, and he got me. So credit to him. Obviously, he's a hard hitter. We knew that going in. He wasn't meant to land like that, but he did. So credit to him. Obviously, you know, I've been champion of this featherweight division a long time. He keeps mentioning Spain. Maybe we'll do a rematch over there in Spain.
Well, you have been an amazing champion, and I would love to see you fight again, no matter who you fight and where you fight. It is an honor to call your fight, as always. Thank you, sir. Alexander Volkanovski, ladies and gentlemen.
And he therefore gives you an impression that everything's going to be okay. But was he 36, 37? Two knockout losses on the trot. Lost three out of his last four. Could easily be 2-2. And actually, that first one, no one can count. The Makhachev loss, it's obviously the first loss of those three. Not his first ever loss. It was his second loss, right? He lost back when he was a fucking welterweight or something. But yeah, that first one, you know, the fight with Makhachev really come out of that as the winner. So really, he's only lost two. But he's lost two by knockout on the trot. Now, chatting to the boys about this morning, I'm very much aware that I sort of led the funeral march for Roman Gonzalez when he lost to Strisket, sort of rung with his eye in that hard fight and then got absolutely fucking obliterated. And he went on and on. And Volkanovski seemed very much with it. He's not really given any other indications that he's shot physically, that his reaction time's bad or anything like that. He just got swallowed up by, in the first instance, a much larger fighter who caught him unawares on very, very short notice. And Makhachev's an underrated striker, certainly nowadays. His precision and sort of timing's come on. He's awkward and janky. He just got caught. Got his fucking head split open, and immediately he's back up and went, oh, fuck, I got caught. And this one, he just got obliterated by a guy who looks to have little to no weakness based on what we know about him. You can't keep doing this, but it's certainly not a Tony Ferguson situation. Easily see Volkanovski come back later on in the year. I'd like to see him fight the winner of Aljamain Sterling and Calvin Cater myself. I think that's a perfect fight, especially if it's Aljamain Sterling. That's a perfect fight for both of them. Aljamain Sterling gets to take on the former champion, former pound-for-pound number one, and prove I'm back at 145, I'm ready for a title shot. Much as, my God, I would not want to see him fight Ilia Topuria. And Volkanovski gets to fight a former champion and sort of top 10 pound-for-pounder. Not that scary, you know, in terms of the offensive output. I mean, for me, even as underrated as I consider Aljamain Sterling in his championship prime, I think Volkanovski has to be pretty far gone physically to lose to him in terms of a stylistic basis. But Volkanovski kids you into thinking he's absolutely fine. He could be shot to pieces, because that is a horrendous knockout to take after taking one so recently. When was that fight? November? So, yeah, I think if he wants to give it another go, he's earned the right to do so. If I'm the UFC, I say, please, be on our commentary booth. You would be a fantastic analyst, and you're beloved. And that's the great thing about Volkanovski that we've seen in recent times, especially since the first Makhachev fight. Actually, I think maybe since the Korean Zombie fight, when the UFC made a very concerted effort to say, this guy is one of the best. They didn't realise they had one before then, it seemed, but they kept saying, this guy's one of the best, and now fans seem to love it.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Very interesting point raised by a mate on Twitter this morning, saying, do you remember after the second Holloway fight where he was basically public enemy number one, condemned for daring to win a close fight? And now he seems to be one of the more beloved fighters around. Very well respected, very well liked. His personality is well received. You know, amiable chap and good humoured, good natured, fucking nails, tough competitor in the cage. And I think people have really warmed to him over the last couple of years and embraced him as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport. And because of that, and because Topuria has just wasted him in such brutal fashion, I think that if he plays his cards right, Topuria could be one of the biggest stars in the sport. And the UFC's actually, you know, crying out for more established stars at the moment anyway. But Volkanovski being so well-loved, I mean, give him a fucking job. Get him out of the cage, but keep him fighting. If he wants to fight again, fine. But the whole idea of having a rematch on foreign soil, I don't really see any outcome where Volkanovski can beat Topuria. I was talking to Ryan Wagner about it online. Or anyone listening to this podcast with any regularity, you know, I probably rate him as the best analyst around. He was saying, you know, Volkanovski still has a path to victory. Prime for prime. Anyway, and if we still consider that Volkanovski is somewhere near his prime, I don't think Ryan might be saying too much that, you know, his claim that, you know, Volkanovski can pressure Topuria more, not allow himself to get run back to the cage, etc., give him a better chance of winning, is still holds true. But for me, entering anywhere near the pocket more frequently isn't going to convince me that he has a better chance of winning. And Topuria is so explosive, fast, varied, does it, is all smart, all the stuff's coming, as I say, coming off the jab or coming off combos, level changes, feints, etc. Kicking game's getting better and better. Defence is pretty darn good. All these things just make me think it's a pretty poor matchup, Volkanovski, all things considered. He's usually a faster guy in there. He's usually the more active feinter. He's usually able to fall back on his grappling and his cage clinch game if he needs to. All these things seem to be somewhat of a moot point against Topuria, who's younger, as fast, slash faster, I would say faster is fair. Way more powerful and seems to be, based on what we know of the digs he took against Josh Emmett, more durable. And this is my main thing with Volkanovski. I'm not so sure he's ever really faced any massive punches. Mendes was a good puncher, there's no doubt about it. Aldo could crack a bit, obviously. But we know full well that Aldo could also make 135, which was a shock to me. Holloway has never been a big puncher. He's a you know, volume puncher, and he stung Volk, caught him. Makachev caught him, pushed him back on his heels. Obviously a bigger guy, but no one's going to say he's a knockout puncher. These are all good punches. Some excellent punches, but they're not big knockout punches. Now, the idea, of course, that Volk could fight someone, say, equal power to Topuria, but far less craft, and survive, is absolutely fine. Not going to doubt that for a second. Volkanovski is not some, you know, glass jaw joke or anything like that. I think when you put all that together, based on Topuria having the all-round skill set plus that massive dig, and he does seem to be a genuine knockout artist, I just think it's a really untenable situation for Volkanovski. And the idea that, oh, he could tweak it. I mean, he might tweak it and survive. I'm still not sure I'd bank on him doing enough to keep Topuria honest or even just to win a point fighting contest. I just don't see it. It's a bad, historically bad matchup for him. Doesn't mean that Topuria is going to go on and be a greater fighter than him or anything like that, although he very well could be. But I certainly don't want to see Volkanovski in there with him again. And not at this stage. I really hope that my attempt to be balanced there has come across as such, because I don't want anyone to think I'm just writing him off in some kind of recency bias thing. And as I say, I'll offer an example before when I was completely wrong about a fighter who I assumed, based on what I know about career, ebb and flows, was done for, and absolutely was not. And Volkanovski, very, very smart fighter, cerebral fighter, strong as an ox, and mentally and physically. As I say, even if he is letting fights affect him more than he is letting on, he's strong enough mentally to go, fuck this, I'm getting straight back in there with the most dangerous bloke in the division 3 months after I got sparked out, and he did it. And he did not look like a bloke that was perturbed, did not look like a bloke that was awed by the situation. He was in there to win it. That's strong mental. That's being very, very strong mentally. As for Ilia Topuria, obviously, we're not going to put him top of the pound-for-pound rankings just yet, but based on his recent run, you know, 3 top teners, including the best in the division, and a top 2 pound-for-pound guy himself in Volkanovski. He's obviously, you know, going to be on the list soon. If you go on skill set, who would beat who if they were the same size, that sort of thing. Well, he's got it all by the looks of it. Just a wonderfully streamlined destroyer of men. It is very rare to get this sort of blend of skill set in any combat sport. There's always the worry, of course, that he's going to become over-reliant on his power or in love with his power and lose the nuance that makes him so dangerous. But he seems to have his head screwed on, so let's hope that's not the case. Let's hope for a big fight at the Bernabeu or Nou Camp or whatever in Spain. That'd be great. They have a big UFC card in Spain. I'd love to see that. But Topuria, the issue for me is he sort of comes as 145 is in some sort of transitionary phase where we kind of know who the haves and the have-nots are. There's only one real elite guy that he could find. That's Max Holloway, who may well be about to have the last of his prime beaten out of him at the cement fist of Justin Gaethje. I'd give Gaethje some sort of promise at an equally big fight, maybe not on 300, but on another card, and say to Max, come on, you can squeeze down to 145 in time. We want to see you fight Ilia Topuria. Of course, Holloway could beat Gaethje, and then the Topuria fight is absolutely massive. Absolutely massive. And you wonder, you know, it's the, what is it, immovable object versus the unstoppable force. Max is just made of iron. You wonder, could his volume, could he stay in it? Could he work at Topuria? Could he drown him late? Could he take him to some deep waters? Could he make him at least show us something different? Will Topuria rely on his grappling, etc.? You know, it's a different kind of fight. I watched this one and went, oh, Volkanovski's grappling sort of being cancelled out, but Topuria wasn't using it either. And about, you know, just halfway through the second round, I thought, oh, it's not really bad kickboxing about for the whole time, is it? But no, Topuria's just really comfortable on the feet. Just wonder, you know, if Holloway's doing his little spammy low kick, working his way in, getting the volume going, getting his jab going. He's long, he's durable, he just doesn't stop fucking going. If Topuria might start to unravel a little bit. As it stands, I'm taking Topuria. I think he's not just a coming man. As I said earlier, he is the man right now. Very, very impressed by him. And obviously, after Holloway, this whole idea that I was just saying, you know, dominate the division and whatnot. Who's there to dominate? Who's he going to fight? Who of any interest in the UFC's featherweight division would make you think, oh, that's more exciting than Topuria dusting off Max Holloway and moving up to fight Islam Makhachev, or moving up to fight Gaethje, Poirier, Benoit Saint-Denis, whoever's there. Obviously, he has fought at 155 before. I'd love to see him establish dominance at 145, but he seems to have bigger goals. He did say in the post-fight press conference, you know, I'll fight whoever the UFC put in front of me, but I'm sure he'd love to fight Conor McGregor in a big money fight. I'm sure the UFC would love to put that one on, especially if McGregor can beat Chandler. If McGregor can beat Chandler, I think it's on. I think it's a big one, for sure. It's kind of fight they do at Croke Park, or as I say, or Bernabeu, or whatever. And, yeah, I think it'd be worthwhile from a monetary business standpoint, don't get me wrong. I couldn't give a fuck about Topuria fighting Conor McGregor, to be honest with you. He's been mentioning it for the past couple of weeks. And his star is in the ascendancy. I know we're going to say, you know, they have very similar career paths. McGregor was like this. And it's probably the ascension to the top that I can think is most comparative. You know, McGregor was just everywhere at that point. Bigger star. But in terms of running through top-level opponents and smashed a pound-for-pounder, most people have had Jose Aldo pound-for-pound number one at the time. See, Volkanovski was pound-for-pound number one not too long ago. Certainly, even though Topuria's sort of arrogance seems just for the cameras, and McGregor seemed inherent to his actual personality, I think Topuria's probably quite a nice, humble chap away from this fake trash talk. I can see them using that as a springboard to selling the fight. You know, both knockout artists, both 145-pound champions, now we're going to fight at 155, whatever. I'm still not certain that McGregor's going to fight again. I'm still not certain how the fuck he's going to look against Chandler. Bad, I imagine. And I prefer to see, as I say, Topuria could fight Max Holloway. He could fight Evloev, who's undefeated as well. They could sell it like that. I think Topuria would fucking annihilate Evloev, to be honest with you. But it would sell and it'd be a worthwhile contender to fight. don't think the winner of Calvin Kattar and Aljamain Sterling does anything for me personally. Doesn't do much for Topuria either. And the winner of Yair and Brian Ortega, well, that's three generations of featherweight championship leftovers, yeah? Lost to fucking Holloway and Volkanovski, the pair of them, and now we're gonna do Topuria battering one of them as well. Doesn't do much for me. I can see why they might do it, but not much from there. Unless someone emerges, which will happen from time to time, or was a super fight at one, you know, O'Malley beats off. Umatron batters a couple of contenders and suddenly adds a bit of muscle, and you go, well, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that. That don't do anything for me either. Topuria looks that fucking good. So, you know, Holloway plus Avloyev plus Ortega Yair winner. Do that in 12 months. Get moving. Bloke looks like a superstar and can't wait to see him fight next. This reign at 145 being sure if Gaethje knocks the shit out of Holloway even for a bit, because you need Holloway to be at the absolute peak of his durability if he's going to have any chance of combating Topuria, in my opinion. But hey, you know, stranger things have happened, and I'm not exactly counting Holloway out in that fight against Gaethje. Gaethje can be flaky, we know that, and if that is going to be a five rounder, could be there for Max. We know that, you know, Poirier hurt him. I think Gaethje's the harder single hitter than Poirier, but Poirier's no slouch in the punching department. Hurt Max more than once in that fight, and Max came surging back. So, and obviously went the five rounds. So, yeah, I think, you know, counting Holloway out when he seems to be doing the weight well. That's another thing as well. If he's going to pack on a bit of muscle now to be a bit stronger at 155, is he then going to be able to cut down to 145 as easy? We've seen him before look like an absolute skeleton at the weight. So all these things add up to whether or not that fight would be as interesting as it could be as of today. But I'd absolutely love to see it. On the we had a bit of a group Discord chat on Saturday night. It's unrelated to this podcast. You're not missing out. And me and someone else, I can't remember who now, but said it basically at the same time. The Matador is not an apt nickname for Topuria. It should be called The Bull. I wrote on X/Twitter this morning. Am I finally going to say X? No, I'm going to say Twitter. He's a one-man wrecking machine. Cuts through grapplers with ease. Stands in the pocket with knockout eyes. Takes apart generals. He has it all. He should be called The Bull. The Bull. That's why he's The Bull. The Bull.
That's what I'm talking about. That's why he's the MVP. That's why he's the GOAT. The GOAT.
Well, he ain't the GOAT just yet, but Ilia Topuria, as you just heard from me, very, very formidable indeed. And I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on the future of the featherweight division, the future of Topuria's career, the future of Alexander Volkanovski's career. Do you think he should come back? Do you want to see a rematch? Do you think that he can actually now, even better plan for Topuria, knowing even more what his attacks are? Or, like me, would you prefer for Volkanovski to take on some lesser challenges and see the sun set on his career in a much more pleasant way than the nuclear fireball of another Topuria right hand bouncing off his ever-aging dome? Until next time, and there will be more podcasts coming to this feed, but if you want to get a more regular dose of Combat Chronicles, again, that address is www.patreon.com/combatchronicles, but whether you sign up or not, you'll be hearing from me soon. Have a great one. Thanks for listening. Appreciate your time. And if you do want to support the podcast further, you can just give it a 5-star rating and review on your preferred podcast platform. Helps make it more visible to others. Thanks. See ya.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.